Of any society is how it treats its women and girls.
Also known as Enda's Corner on Twitter. Collectively, we are at Black Girl Squee on Twitter. You can also find us on Tumblr at blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. You can also email us at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. You can find our show on iTunes, where you can rate us and leave us a review. We'd appreciate those. You can also find us on Google Play Podcasts. And you can also find us at our podcast home on Simplecast at blackgirlsqueed.simplecast.fm. You can also support us, support the show at Patreon. The Black Girl Squee Patreon is patreon.com/blackgirlsquee. I also have an individual one at Enda Lauren, which helps me out with a lot of personal things and my writing stuff. If you support Black Girl Squee, you get lots of good premium content, including recaps of and reviews of shows like Claws and Insecure on HBO. And you can also now find the latest premium content, which is an audio review of Baye's Ash. I mean, and I was actually on that one. So, yes, I was, because we all know how I feel about music. But if you want to get access to that content, you know, go to that Patreon and, you know, set up a monthly donation. Okay, a couple of housekeeping notes. We have a spoiler policy, and that is we spoil shit. So we mention a show, a movie, or something like that. Chances are we are going to have spoilers, so this is your warning. Also, we cuss a lot, and we talk about peen. And... and as a word of warning,
yes, we do.
As you heard at the beginning, we squee loud and often, so you may want to adjust your volume accordingly. And as Dee Dee always says, I squee louder than she does, because she just always has to add that.
Because it's true. I'm telling the truth.
Okay.
I'm kicking the truth to the young black youth. Just whatever.
All right. Okay, so let's get started in our squee-worthy notes. So,
The March for Black Women was in D.C. last weekend. Was held in D.C. And there were several articles covering it, so I'm just going to go through a few of them. The Washington Post had an article called "Let the Black Women Lead. Marches Converge on D.C. to Highlight Racial Injustice." The March for Black Women was held on the same day as the March for Racial Justice. Both marches met in Capitol Hill and then marched together to the Mall, which is an area in D.C. that has a lot of monuments and also houses the main unit of the Smithsonian. It's different from just going to a mall. When you say going to the mall in D.C., it means that area with all the monuments and museums. So from the article, there is one of the organizers of the March for Black Women, whose name is Farah Tanis, said the timing of the simultaneous events was intentional. She had heard about the March for Racial Justice and wanted to host a separate march to focus specifically on struggles black women face. So, good. Good, because we do tend to get the for racial justice. And she says so. She says, recognizing black women didn't happen in the civil rights movement or in the women's rights movement. It shows we are going in the right direction. Before the march, activists spoke about issues such as domestic violence, the wage gap, and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos's rolling back of the Title IX protections.
I know.
So much fuckery has happened in so little time, Lord. So the march was held on the same day as the March for Racial Justice. It was also held on the same day as Yom Kippur, which is a Jewish holiday. But that did not stop some Jewish people from taking part. The article interviewed a couple of white Jewish allies, but didn't mention any black Jewish people, and I wish they had. So, you know, maybe you want to... Maybe yeah. not want to alienate some of the demographic for the march by holding out on a religious holiday, but you know, something to learn from. This article counted at least 1,000 marchers. Just take note of that because others have different counts. Other articles have different counts. The Huffington Post had an article called Hundreds Gather for the March for Black Women. And it mentions that several groups joined together to create the march, including Black Women's Blueprint, BYP 100, and Trans Sisters of Color Project. The goal of the march was to, quote, denounce the propagation of state violence and the widespread incarceration of black women and girls, rape and all sexualized violence, the murder and brutalization of trans women, and the disappearance of our girls from our streets, our schools, and our homes. End quote. And that was from a statement about the march. Monica Ray Simpson, who is the executive director of Sister Song, said, quote, "We are marching to say that black women's lives matter, that black mamas matter, and to call for an end to systems and policies that deny our dignity, from bans on abortion coverage to mass incarceration," end quote. There were also sister marches in Phoenix, St. Louis, and Philadelphia. And one more note from The Root, two more notes from The Root, that wrote an article called Thousands Descend on Washington, D.C. for the March for Black Women. Like, all of these reports are going back and forth on the count. We had 1,000 to hundreds, now thousands. It's like the Million Man March all over again. Can't nobody count. So this article also mentions that the march celebrated the 20-year anniversary of the Million Women's March that was held in Philadelphia. And then I just had to include this because I'm petty. Michaela Angela Davis said to the crowd before the march, "Look around. Look at the ways you black women show up to a march. Braids, afro puffs. Y'all can't fit that under a pink hat."
That was like my favorite quote from the whole day.
I live.
I know.
Pity heart. It was just flying. Just yes. That hat didn't even look like a pussy. Anyway, so to all of the what pussy you like at, Anda? Anyway, okay. Oh, so to all of the women that planned and participated in the March for Black Women, we give a big
scream! Okay. Okay, so for our next We Were the Item, we have to give a bit more information and give an addendum to what we wanted to talk about for it. Because Candace Frederick, she goes by Real Talk Online, or Real Talker Online, R-E-E-L. And she's a very good film critic, and one of the only prominent black female movie critics I kind of know and I follow on Twitter. She did a review on the death and life of Marsha P. Johnson and the urgency of stories about trans women of color. And I also live tweeted the documentary last night from Netflix. However, today we just saw on Twitter that the man who directed it, David France, who is a white cishet male, apparently he's a white cis gay man. Well, anyway, basically, well, you know what I was going to say. Basically, he took this work from a lady named Raina, I hope I said her name right, Raina Gossett, who is a black trans woman, and another woman named Sasha Wartzell. And they made a grant application video to the Arcus Foundation. Well, France was visiting Arcus at the time and said he should be the one to do the film, and he got the grant. And so France uses Gossett's language and research on Star, and he's the one who got the big project and got it to Netflix after this black trans woman and her partner did all the work on it. So.
And yeah, and I'm getting all of this from Janet Mock's Twitter. Janet Mock posted an Instagram post from Raina Gossett, who starts it off to say, "This week, while I'm borrowing money to pay rent, David France is releasing his multi-million dollar Netflix deal on Marsha P. Johnson."
And it's such a fucking shame, because it is a good documentary and it brings up so much important stuff about trans activism and, you know, the mystery and the whole of attempt to get her case reopened, because people think she was murdered or she was killed, but because I think her death was ruled a suicide or an accident, and most of the people who knew her don't believe this. But want to still talk a bit about Candace's article and also what the documentary did. So from the article, it says that it actually goes beyond the headlines and the 140-character Twitter post to tell the story of one of the most famous and respected transgender people known throughout the U.S. and the world. And in doing so, it provides a sense of humanity to a community that has for too long been discarded and ignored. And she also, it focuses on Victoria Cruz, who's part of the New York City Anti-Violence Project. And she's the dominant figure throughout the film. She tries to piece together the details about and personal quotes and reflections from people who knew Marsha Johnson, and especially during her last days. And so it's kind of like a mystery going on there, too. And Candace also writes that the narrative that is at once enraging, deeply sad, and bold. It's enraging because it highlights so many careless errors made by law enforcement in their haste to close the case. Bold because it demonstrates the passion of fellow activists in the community who got out of their way to protect and honor their own. And sad because this 25-year-old case remains unsolved. And I'm also glad to see it mentioned here that the doc, it tells a broader story of transgender activism with Sylvia Rivera, because if you know a little bit about Marsha Johnson a little bit, you know she and Sylvia Rivera, they're linked. They are always linked. And when you see that, if you still want to see the film after, you know, knowing how this happened, you'll see why they're linked and why it's important to keep them linked. But Rivera co-founded the Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, or STAR, with Johnson, and they helped house, feed, and support young trans women and drag queens. And it also highlights the friction between the gay and trans communities as well. So it's includes that amazing footage from the 1973 rally where Sylvia Rivera just basically went and put the entire gay community on blast for how they treated the trans community, and then find out what happened to her after that moment, because it's just, it's infuriating and it's heartbreaking, but Wow. It's just even more so now knowing that this work was stolen from a black trans woman by a white gay man. The layers
of fuckery. That just makes it even worse. May he burn on so many levels of hell for this. I'm still looking at Raina Gossett's Instagram post. She says that he told the people who worked while he was visiting that he should be the one to do this film. He got the grant from Sundance and Arcus. Using my language and research about Star, got Vimeo to remove my video of Sylvia's critical "y'all better quiet down" speech, ripped off decades of my archival research that I experienced so much violence to get, had his staff call Sasha up at work to get our contacts, then hired my and Sasha's advisor to our Marsha film, Kimberly Reed, to be his producer. She says, that's just the shit I have the spoons to name. Trust, there's so much more. This kind of extraction, excavation of black life, disabled life, poor life, trans life, is so old and so deeply connected to the violence Marsha had to deal with throughout her life.
Oh, wow. How could you actually be making the film that addresses all that shit and not see... Exactly.
How you're... You're doing the same thing. You're enacting the same kind of violence.
Well, look, if there is a way that you can support Raina Gossett, I mean, if she has, like, any type of crowdfunding thing, if, you know, you see her on Twitter or Instagram saying, okay, we need resources for this or that, please support her.
Yes, if you go on Janet Mock's Twitter, she has a thread about Raina. Just really quickly, Raina Gossett is a black trans woman who reintroduced our generation to ourselves by uncovering / recentering trans women of color revolutionaries. Her digital archives of movement foremothers, Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, are integral to current understanding of their contributions. She researched archived digitized content inaccessible for decades. She interviewed Marsha and Sylvia's peers. She did this work without pay. A black trans work about a black trans woman was used to make a film by a credentialed white cis man, aided by Netflix's millions. Meanwhile, Raina is borrowing money to pay rent as viewers around the world watch a film based on her unpaid and uncredited work. Not okay. Janet also refers people to Raina's website, which is RainaGossett.com, RainaGossett.com. She encourages people to book her as a speaker and let others know about her work. So, please check out RainaGossett.com find out how you can support Raina Gossett and her work.
So, for Raina Gossett, for Janet Mock, for Marsha P. Johnson, who I'm really hoping we celebrate here because they are the pioneers, and you know, glad to see that Raina did the work to retrieve, you know, her foremothers, and hopefully this will all come to a bigger light and she will reap some rewards for that she deserves. So for them, we are going to give a big squeeze. Yes.
And an early fade to David yes. France. Fuck you. All right. Susan Kelechi Watson did an interview with Essence, and we got from it the article, She Is Us. Susan Kelechi Watson plays in every woman with a wide heart. Kelechi Watson plays Beth Pearson on NBC's This Is Us. She is the daughter of Jamaican parents from Brooklyn. I did not know this, but she studied theater at Howard University.
No.
Oh, man.
Ooh. You know how good I felt when I read that? I was like, I didn't even know. We everywhere. We out here. We out here. Anyway, y'all better recognize.
It's you.
Susan wears her natural hair on the show in many different styles, including braids, ponytails, and curls. She says, this is my little shout out to black women. Just to let us know, this is beautiful what we have on top of our heads. So, to Susan Kelechi Watson, alum, we give a big...
All right. Okay. So next in Our Little Baby Is Growing Up Squeeworthy News, Quvenzhané Wallace writes two children's books. The Huffington Post reports that it was announced that she has a book deal with Simon Schuster. Well, she had a book deal with Simon Schuster in 2015. And so her first two books, A Night Out with Mama and Shy and Emmy Star in Break an Egg, came out on Tuesday. The article mentions that A Night Out with Mama was inspired by Wallace's experience at the Oscars. Aww. And according to the Associated Press, and Shy and Emmy starting Breaking an Egg is the first book in a series about best friends. So she worked with co-author Nancy Olin, you know, for these projects. And, God, I can't believe she's 14 now. She's 14 and already a published author and the youngest ever Oscar nominee. Oh. Yes.
Bless.
Our babies.
Black excellence.
For Quvenzhané, we would like to give a big... But
she said, "No, I don't have one book for you. No, not just one. I got two for you. Deal with it. Deal with it.
No,
you ain't ready. You ain't ready." Oh, speaking of ain't ready, Julie Dash, the 2-part Queen's Sugar season premiere. Ah. As many of you know, this 1991 film, Daughters of the Dust, was the first to be directed by a woman and get theatrical distribution in the U.S. Wow, 1991. She was the first. This is her first time directing episodic television. She did direct a TV movie in the 90s. I think it was about Rosa Parks. Starring Angela Bassett.
She also did another TV movie, Funny Song. Valentine's with Alfre Woodard and Loretta Devine.
Yeah, but still, but this is her first time directing episodic television in 2017. Wow. See, we're still doing this first thing. It's bullshit. Anyway, Dash says, I didn't think we'd still be having these conversations in 2017. Okay, Julie. she's echoing my thoughts perfectly. The conversation did not change until Ava changed it. Dash got an offer to direct in the first season, but was teaching at Morehouse at the time and couldn't commit. But Dash says, but this year she made sure there was room for me after graduation in the spring. that's how I was able to secure two spots.
Yes!
So for Dash, the series is full of life lessons, which also made me continue telling Black women stories on screen. She says, quote, "It's important because it's also a healing moment, a truth-telling healing moment. We all need to go through it," she says. She also continues to say, "Yeah, it's painful, but it has to be done. In many ways, these episodes of Queen Sugar can also be said to be instructional in a way to help you get through it," end quote. So, the two-hour mid-season premiere happened this week on, Tuesday and Wednesday. I still haven't seen it yet, but I just now, I just got caught up.
Like, I have to...
on the first half of the season, so... so we can't really spoil it as much as we want to. So, but we'll be right back. We'll spoil it eventually. So, Julie Dash and Ava DuVernay, we give a big
Okay. Wow. All right. So, in a bit of Squeeworthy music news,
hey,
guess who finally dropped her album? Yay, Layla! And on top of that, this past week, she had the cover story for The Fader, which was awesome because I forget her name. I'm so sorry, but the cover story was written by another Black woman. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of other Black women around the photo shoot and stuff, too. So, yes. All right. So, a bit from that story. Layla was born in 1983 to her parents who immigrated to the Washington, D.C. area. Hey, y'all neighbors. her parents lived in the same apartment building in the Maryland suburbs, but on different floors. So, she listened to soul and jazz with her mom and Tracy Chapman with her dad. Wow. She aced an audition for the Duke Ellington School of the Arts, but her parents couldn't afford the tuition. So she does say that not being able to go to Duke Ellington haunted her for a long time, and she thought she'd missed her chance to become a star. However, she wrote her first song at 26. And if you know anything about music industry, that's actually kind of a lot older than people would like you to be, but... you know, hey, it's never too late. Anyway, she says there was a departure where mainstream Black shit got embraced by white indie bros and almost usurped. But what happened to Black people's contributions in that blurriness? I'm a Black girl who has dreads and is making R&B music, which is not just a sensational and fashionable music, except when it is sung by white people. Ooh. Okay. Right. You tell them, girl. Yep.
She be knowing.
And she be telling too. She ain't holding her tongue to nobody. Right. So she almost signed a 360 deal with a major label, but she held off. Now she's under Saint Heron Management, which is, of course, Solange Knowles' company. All right. She says one of the principles that the establishment has in place is if you were tight, you would have been done it by now. If you were that popping, we would have seen it. Now I feel really good about it. It's the truth about who I am and how I see the world on some level. Yeah. So,
taking her time has worked out for Kalayla. And it's worked out for us.
Yes.
This album is bomb.
I've been a fan of her since 2013 when she did her first mixtape, Cut For Me, which was awesome. Then the next year, I think it was 2014, that EP, Hallucinogen. Oh, that was so good. And so I knew this album. I knew this album was going to pop. I knew it was. And yeah.
Yeah. I remember when she put out Hallucinogen, she said, you know, I'm taking my time working on this full-length album, and you'll see why Cut For Me was just a mixtape, and Hallucinogen was just an EP.
Yes.
And yeah, okay.
And I'm so glad that she does say she doesn't like shy away from like, oh, I'm not R&B. It's no. She said no, I'm R&B because alternative R&B, it just kind of has this different feel and flavor to it. And I think she's kind of one of at the forefront of that. And it really does just show here on this. And so I'm so glad that she's saying this out loud, how black people have trying to get pushed out of the whole alternative R&B thing, when hell, we're creating it. Yes,
it's ours.
Yes,
it's ours. It's ours from the beginning. Yeah, I mean, black people.
Yeah,
pushed R&B as a genre is getting pushed out. Like the people that you would consider your traditional R&B artists can't find deals.
This is why it's important that when these people travel right and do tours and shows and stuff like that, go see them. This is their livelihood, because they can't make money through record companies anymore.
Because the record companies are looking for the next Timberfake. Or, the next white face that they can, make do an R&B sound.
Don't get me started on Timberfake, because the whole Super Bowl thing now. Don't even get me started on that. Okay, but anyway, he can catch all of them.
He can catch a fade, too.
But for right now, let's just be happy Kalayla finally dropped this bomb-ass album on us, because it is superb. This has been such a good... This has been a good October for music right now, and it's only the first week.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. We got Ebayi last week.
Yeah.
We have Kalayla this week. Like, what else? I'm scared. I mean, the last week of September, we got Liz Wright
and Annabelle Lee
and Cult Specs and a bunch of other artists and.
It's a good time. So for Kalayla and her album Take Me Apart, we give a big
Take Me Apart. Hey, if you ever want to do an audio review of the album, my Patreon is wide open to you.
But speaking of premium reviews,
I recently did a little audio something on Patreon. That's patreon.com/blackgirlsquee on Star Trek Discovery, because it premiered 2 weeks ago. The first episode premiered on the Sun Broadcast. Then you had to go to their streaming site, CBS All Access, to see the second episode. And a lot of people bitched and moaned. But and I feel you. It's a pain. All these people are nickel and diming us to have us sign up for their streaming service, and it's too many, and it's not enough. Like, I'm paying too much for too many different sites for only a little bit of content that I'm actually interested in. Like, I can't afford to go to Netflix for this and Hulu for that and CBS All Access for one fucking show. But they have been saying this is what the deal was 4 months, at least 4 or 5 months since we knew that there was going to be a Star Trek Discovery. So it's not like it was a surprise to anybody. It's just, people like to complain. Star Trek Discovery, it premiered for 2 hours 2 weeks ago. The bad thing about it was that it was late. Mm. The first episode was late because of football. And a lot of people were treated to Oprah on 60 Minutes interviewing Trump supporters. That's not how I wanted to spend my Sunday night, and certainly not the way I want, not what I wanted to lead into Star Trek Discovery. It was, oh God, I was so mad. I didn't want to see that at all. You know what else, what I thought about other things? Pay me. Go to patreon.com/blackgirlscream and you'll hear my other thoughts on the premiere. I will say that I'll be eternally bitter about one flat point. It's never gonna change. But Star Trek did really well. Well, surprisingly well in the ratings. They had 10 million viewers for the premiere, which is pretty good. And it also drove downloads for the CBS mobile app for All Access up by 64%. Of course, CBS is not going to reveal how many people that actually was, mm-hmm. or, you know, how many dollars that actually generated. But, it just shows that if you build it, they will come. If you have something that people want to see, they will gripe and bitch and moan, but a lot of them are going to download the app or sign up for your service to get that content. Or, as we found out from Entertainment League, they will just pirate it.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Star Trek Discovery is on the verge of cracking Pirate Bay's top 10 most legally downloaded shows in less than 24 hours of airing. The second episode of the show is at number 17, which is funny because that one wasn't free. It wasn't on broadcast. So somebody found a way to hack CBS All Access and make it available, make the second episode available on Pirate Bay. Which just means that, it will be available any way you want it, whether you want to pay for it or not. CBS doesn't disclose subscriber figures, but it says that Discovery set a record for subscriber signups in a single day, beating the previous one-day record for the 2017 Grammys in February. And one last thing about Star Trek Discovery, Enda referred me to a great article from Electric Literature called "Does Star Trek Discovery Deliver on Its Promise of Diversity?" It's a good question.
Yeah,
I'm still on the fence about, and I'm leaning toward no. This article was basically a discussion between writers Nicole Chung and Rahawa Hale. They were really excited about two women of color leads, as was I. That's what basically sold me on the series. Chung felt it was too good to be true, and ended up being so.
Yes.
Fuck CBS for, and fuck the writing team for what they did. Chung said, "For me, it was thrilling just to see promo photos of Sonequa Martin-Green, who plays Michael Burnham, and Michelle Yeoh, who plays Philippa Georgiou, in their new uniforms on the bridge looking badass. I got choked up seeing Michelle in the captain's chair. In their first scene together, when they're walking through the desert on an alien world, discussing the mission and whether Martin Green's character is ready for her own command, I was about as happy as television has ever
been. Yes! That was actually, that specific moment right there is actually what sold me. That was the moment that got me.
What got me was the moment that you see how implicitly Giorgio trusts Burnham. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And also when Michael first goes out into space and she's just in awe of all the wonder around her. And I'm like, we're really watching this black woman go exploring in space.
Yes.
I had never seen that before. That got me. Hale says, but I wish about everything about Discovery didn't feel so opportunistic. First the CBS All Access subscription. Then their treatment of Yo and Martin Green. And I'm trying not to spoil, but a lot of you already know what happens to both characters. If the allure of diversity in this series, which their promo material relied heavily on, because they knew that is what would hook modern audiences into this show. Like, it's being kind to say that the promo material relied heavily on it. Like, you could say it relied solely on that. And they just did it to hoodwink you. So if the allure of diversity in this series lies not only in who is seen, but who has agency, the show is off to a very questionable start. So in the first two episodes, we see Giorgio caring for her crew and also mentoring Sonequa Martin Green's character. But a new captain that appears in the third episode treats his crew like a means to an end. And that end is winning the war against the Klingons. The new captain played by Jason Isaacs. I'm trying to say this without sounding ableist. Something about dude's thought processes don't curl all the way over.
There's something off about him. But it's it's only third episode, and this is actually, he only shows up in the third episode, and so everything isn't unfolding just yet. But you already know, it's not all, everything's not all okay with him, you know. So,
no. And, Tumblr is so weird because Tumblr is conflating the fact that Jason Isaacs is Jewish with criticism
in
of
real
the
life,
character.
Later.
Like,
no, like in real life, Jason Isaacs is cool. Jason?
yeah, but I saw this post on Tumblr that was conflating the actor with the character and saying that, you know, that we need to give it a chance and not complain because one person of color was kind of replaced by
his character is shady. His character is shady. There's nothing,
his character is not,
there's nothing wrong with putting it out.
Also, we don't Yeah, nothing. We've not been given any information about Lorca's background.
Yeah,
like, exactly. As far as ethnicity or religion or anything like that. Like, for all intents and purposes, all we know about the dude is what's presented before us.
He's acting shady as fuck. That's what we got to go on right now.
So, Tumblr just...
I swear, y'all find...
Tumblr be getting on my nerves with, like, we've got to... y'all just find all of these...
This fucking moderately attractive white dude, and you just have to make everything about him perfect. Listen.
Yeah, just... Thank you. Y'all just
look,
twist
real
yourself
real life
and
Jason
not,
Isaacs
not
is actually
these.
A pretty cool dude, and I'm still cackling
and I'm tired.
Over him going off about Sean Spicer on Instagram, because that was funny. That was funny as hell, and he was right. But that does not mean he can't be playing a not-so-savory character, you know, on a show, because his character is not so savory. Which, actually, thing is, which might be interesting within, you know, the trajectory of Star Trek,
and
because the starship captains are usually kind of these upstanding people, you know, this very kind of yardstick for morality and stuff, and he's not going to be that, so this actually might be interesting, you know.
Yeah, but still,
yeah,
I'm always going to be bitter at that.
Thank you.
I'm going to be
girl,
at
I'm
him.
Just like,
instead
see,
of, well,
I'm kind of like, because I saw a theory, and I'm just like, I really hope, because, no, well, we said we weren't going to spoil. Okay, good. Because somebody was like, okay, you didn't see a body.
No, fuck it, we spoil shit, fuck
it. See her, because you do see her with the, because she got stabbed, and you do see her with that sick enough, but we don't see what happened with her body after that. And this is sci-fi, and... This isn't. It wouldn't be the first time if it turns out that she did somehow survive. Because we've seen resurrections in Star Trek before. I mean, Spock was dead, and you know, at the end of Wrath of Khan, he came back in the next film. So I'm like, so I'm not saying that it can't happen, but I'm like, I'm still mad that you. I'm still just so mad that they just kind of like. Made such a big, huge deal about Michelle Yeoh being in this, you know, series just to kill her off in the second episode. Thank you!
Bullshit. Like,
Michelle
you
Yeoh
don't hire Michelle
bitch,
Yeoh
okay?
and have her play a
Michelle
that
Yeoh
fights
my
that.
Ass and I would thank her for the ass whooping. Like, Thank you. She could have fucked up everybody, but
she would have fucked up all 24 houses of Klingon. Like, what the fuck?
Michelle Yeoh, if I'm not mistaken, is the one
anyway.
Who made Jackie Chan let her do her own stunts because he didn't let women do their stunts. Michelle Yeoh is a Bond girl. Michelle Yeoh will fuck you up, okay?
She's like, yeah. It just no. I just
station here.
I don't know. Lord, it would be great if they bring her back, but they never should have killed her in the first place. I don't know if they will take that much effort to bring back a woman of color, and yeah. It's either they will bring her, they will resurrect her character or something, or
thank you,
or we'll get a bunch of flashbacks. And I'm like, we didn't really have to have flashbacks because we had the character.
Thank you.
If you hadn't killed the character over some bullshit, I would have gotten several years of watching. Giorgio mentor.
But we don't even get Burnham as an officer.
Of Michael Burnham and
she's a mutineer.
Learn how to be a captain. And I really wanted that. Yeah. But she'll probably. But if you see the previews for next episode, she's got some she's got some shiny epaulets on her so.
Life in prison.
But still, okay. But by the end of the second episode, that's just kind of she don't have no rank.
It's a great looking
She's
show.
Been court-martialed so and imprisoned for life. Like,
when you finally put, you know, these women of color here, you have things that happen to the characters that you don't see happening to any other officers in Starfleet in previous series, not the lead characters. You didn't kill the captain off. And you also, you know, you didn't knock down the, you didn't knock somebody down out of their rank, out of Starfleet. Thank you. Yes. Exactly.
Your lead fucking character.
Like,
I mean, this is the first time that it was like the main character is not a captain.
It's like you made absolutely fucking sure she wasn't going to be a captain. You made sure that, didn't you?
The first thing you do is strip away her rank.
And imprison her for life. Okay, fuck y'all.
Yep.
It's like y'all wanted... Y'all treated her like an average Negro. I'm glad Brian Fuller's gone from the show.
Yeah, but
I'll be glad when all of his show story ideas are gone from the show too. That's going to take up a little bit longer. So the last thing from the article.
Yes.
Sorry for that tangent. Sorry, not sorry. It was good.
Yes.
I need to get that off my chest. Hale says, overall, I think my kindest takeaway is that Martin Green has the range. Yes. I think we're all agreed. Martin Green can act her ass off. She can be stoic. She can be emotional. She can be a reserved soldier. She can lie. This is more dexterity than most Star Trek characters usually get to show.
She pulled it off nicely. So, at least for her, I'm sticking with this.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so pretty. She's so pretty. Girl, let me just say one more tangent. When we was at WisCon and we were doing the Women of Luke Cage panel.
Yeah.
Well, there's
I don't know her name. I keep forgetting there's an older black lady
in the audience. She always tries to ask stuff that's
She's so pretty.
She tries to
and the curly fro is popping.
And one of the questions she asks, it's off the subject, but is anybody upset that Sonequa Martin Green's character in Star Trek doesn't have natural hair? Nothing. But hey, look at episode 3. So. Yep. She going all out, Rebel.
What does that have to do with anything? Anyway.
She took the wig off.
She's not an officer no more. That perm going to revert.
You going to deal.
They kept it real.
You going to deal with my forehead hair.
That one.
All right.
Fuck this shit. They're putting me on a prison call. Like, you gonna deal with these curls.
Right. We have one more item of music, and honestly, this should be point, because I know how you feel about Hawick. But
so,
in case you did not know, she will return honestly
to Michelle Yeoh.
And if for some reason you don't know who Layla Hathaway is, please come out from under the rock you're under. And she is a 5-time Grammy-winning singer. And this will be her 8th studio album. Yeah, she led the album with her single, I Can't Wait. I'm going to say I use that for the show, or else I'll put it on reserve. I don't know. Anyway, she did an interview with the album with sightseersroom.com, and she says, "My approach is always to find and write stories, which was the driving factor behind the creation of Honestly. This album is a collection of entirely new and original recordings that really express where I am at this moment in time." So, yeah, she's pre-ordered the album now, and it's also going to be released as a physical album at Target and other retail locations if you are interested. And if you get it there, you'll get two additional mixes, which is an acoustic version of Change Your Life and a Teddy Riley remix of the lead single I Can't Wait. Wow, Teddy Riley still works. Okay, so, was there anything you wanted to add about it? Yes. Yes. Yep. Cause I'm just like, just wait.
Layla Hathaway's voice is everything. She also, the day that the the album was announced, she released a video on her YouTube channel that is an acoustic version of her singing I Can't Wait with her keyboardist.
We got a month to wait, but for now, while we are waiting for Layla to drop this goodness
my on us, my concerto babies are coming. They're coming for you next. This fall, Liz Wright, Jasmine Sullivan on the Insecure soundtrack, Layla Hathaway with her next album. Come on. Come on.
Let's start.
Where you at, Cassandra? Yeah, she's just waiting to give me the, like, the final, the death blow to just knock me all the way out.
All right.
Oh, Layla.
Next, a really quick catch the fade, because I'm not going on for too long, because quite frankly, this is about what people really just don't really give shit about, but you know what? Give them fade anyway. Well, you may have heard over this past week some hullabaloo about y'all's fave, Cam Newton, because he stay fucking up these days. I don't know what the fuck happened to him. So, apparently, he insulted a reporter during a
press
conference.
And you see she waited to drop it during Scorpio season because she loved me.
Well, from what I could tell about the response to it, I was like, this must be a white woman.
That's what it is.
Because people are really fucking upset that he insulted.
Like 11 days before my birthday.
Turns out, yes, she
is. Okay, Layla, I see you.
Now,
you see me too.
The thing is, yeah, you can't criticize him for being sexist and all. But as it turns out, this reporter, whose name I don't know, and I don't really care to learn, she's been called out because she's had some racist shit on her, to her name. She had some racist tweets people found, and I'm like, okay, so what we got here? We got a sexist black man and a racist white woman. I have no dog in this fight. Because both of y'all can just sit the fuck down and shut the hell up. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I noped all the way out of this discourse because it ain't nothing for me here. And the actual details of the exchange was that in the press room after a game, the white woman asked Cam a question about one of his teammates running routes, and he giggled and said, "It's kind of funny to hear a female asking about routes." So go ahead, if you're listening at home, and break down all the different ways that one sentence is fucked up. And one, he said females instead of woman. Two, it's her fucking job.
Yep.
But,
y'all handle that.
The white reporter is racist, and this, every time.
Yep.
I just can't help but think about the fact that a lot of these sports that are most popular, football, basketball, are, populated by black athletes and covered by white reporters, by majority white reporters. And when you have a dynamic like that, we're always going to have issues like this.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Yeah, fuck both of y'all. And,
oh, yeah.
I will continue to nope out of this conversation, because it ain't nothing for me here.
Oh, yeah. Because, as you know, yeah, go ahead.
So, and you're going to see a lot of black men on Twitter caping for Cam, saying, and caping for him, not caping for what he said. They might be magnanimous enough to say, oh, he fucked up. But so did she. But we have to. But let's focus on this racism, though. Cause men live flecked. It's why they're the white people of black people, and until they deal with that and examine that, that statement is always going to be true. So y'all can catch the fade. Fuck all y'all. As we said before, fuck David France.
Yep.
And fuck Justin Timberfake. We might as well get into it. After Beyonce's husband declined playing the halftime show for the upcoming Super Bowl, news was spread that Justin Timberfake was closing in on a deal to do the halftime show. So this brought up a lot of anger, because black people ain't forgot what he did to Janet. And how he got real white and Miley Cyrus'd his way right on out of trouble when things got hot. Yep. And meanwhile, Janet barely gets, they barely allow Janet on TV. I remember one time years ago she performed for the like Billboard Awards or something like that, but she can't come back to the Super Bowl. Even when they do retrospectives of halftime shows, she's never featured. They've done their best to just keep her off of TV. And that's okay. She's still one of the best to ever do it and one of the biggest stars ever. But meanwhile, white boy skates. and somehow he actually did vocals on a posthumous Michael Jackson album, which is just insult meets injury, or injury meets just all of it. So for him to get his own halftime show after all of the brouhaha that people went into over a titty.
Yep.
Y'all should feel blessed to see that. And I hope your pants fall apart and your dick falls out on stage. Anyway, fuck you. You catch the fade. And I hope it's ashy too. I hope it looks dry and shriveled and small when it falls out. Yeah. I hope it doesn't look anything like Lenny Kravitz. No, I hope it looks like the total opposite. French fry style. Fuck you.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. So, now we got that out of our system. Let's talk about pain. Hey, so, yeah. Okay, so I think I actually managed to find somebody we haven't included before, but I don't know why we didn't, because I love this guy. Okay, so you all may know I am a huge fan of the show Survivor's Remorse, and my actual favorite TV couple is on that show. And one half of that couple is played by Robert Wu. He plays a character called Da Qian Bao on a show, and he is the boyfriend of the show's, the matriarch of the show, Cassie Calloway. And they are just the absolute best couple on television. So Robert Wu, he's of Chinese descent. He's an American actor and producer. And we can't really find much else about him because I think he's just really good at keeping things private. But on the show, he's like a mid-late 30-something, and he's actually just really perfect as, you know, the billionaire boyfriend of Cassie. And I'm going to try not to just squee all over that show and everything, but he, Tashina Arnold, and Erica Ash are like the best supporting actors in comedy right now, and he's got so much more to do this season. And so I just did a random tweet, like, he's now on that list of where the F are they Emmy already, because he did such a great job in one episode, and actually a few others too, but I'm looking at him and he is giving, you know, award worthy performances, you know, as this character. And he's so sweet, because the people from Survivor's Remorse, they, you know, tweeted, you know, back at me, like, yeah, he consistently gives award-worthy performances, and, you know, we're very proud of him and work with him. And he actually also tweeted back at me and said, like, thanks for the support and all. So, yeah, he's a cool guy. He knows how to work his social media.
Look at you racking up all these days on social media. I see.
I wish, but
I see you. I'm trying to get like you. I want to be long too.
And also, if you look at the images there, he's a cutie. I mean, he does. I think he's a lot older than he looks.
He looks like a baby face, though. He looks so young. Because,
yeah, like you said, that's a baby face right there.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, Robert Wu, like, dude, congrats, because I love you in this show. I love this show. He is just one of the best characters I've seen in it, because he's a billionaire, and the more you get to know him, you know, he ain't do all kosher stuff to get to where he is, but like, he and Tashina Arnold together just make me so happy. Yeah.
All right. So I will be checking for him. I may have to start the show. you'll have to, we'll talk about later how to get me started on that show. Gotcha. So I just wanted to mention another cutie from our TV screens, and it's Alimi Ballard, another actor. He plays Dr. Robert Dubois on Queen Sugar. And if you've seen him in the second season, he is crushing on Nova borderline pretty hard. Obvious why.
And before that, he was.
And he's a little cutie.
Before that, he was also a regular like on a show called Numbers on CBS.
Epidemiologist I have ever seen.
Yeah, I used to watch
and,
that show.
And he was also a CBS regular on ABC's The Catch. You might have seen him there. Black don't crack, baby. He is an actor from Bronx in New York, and yeah, I can see that. I think I can definitely still hear that in his voice sometimes, even on Queen Sugar. The last episode I saw, he lifted Nova bodily and put her on the kitchen counter and was about to show him what it do. So I am ready to see more of him. Take that any way you want it. And
all right, so
that is
okay.
That is our
Women's Vocab. And today's term is doublespeak.
And that
doublespeak is derived from George Orwell's dystopian novel 1984, even though it never appears in the novel. It means language deliberately constructed to disguise actual meaning. It directly focuses on language deliberately constructed for political purposes, meant to impose a desirable mental attitude upon the person using the language. William Lutz calls it language that pretends to communicate but doesn't. Doublespeak.
So pretty much anything that comes out of the White House. Gotcha. I'd be trying to contextualize and shit.
That's exactly right.
Cause they be saying a whole lot of words, but they don't be meaning nothing.
All right. Okay.
Let me not get started on that.
Okay, so that is our show for today. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can find us at Black Girl Squeak Collectively. You can find us individually at Enda's Corner and at Dust Daughter. Like we said before, our Tumblr is blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. You can also email us at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Please don't email Black Squirrel. Okay, you can also find us on iTunes, where you can give us a 5-star review and leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. You can also find us on Google Play Podcast, also leave us a review there. And you can find us at our podcast home at Simplecast, blackgirlsquee.simplecast.fm. And if you would like to support the show, we would really appreciate it. You can find us on patreon.com/blackgirlsquee. And I am also there at Enda Lauren. And if you subscribe to Patreon, remember there's lots of premium content. You can find reviews and recaps of shows like Claws and Insecure. And now also album reviews like... what did we just do? A baby. So some really good stuff for our Patreon subscribers. We'd really appreciate the support. But until next time, Bye.